Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm going to talk a little bit about the systems perspective on the parachute and summarize some of the things. This was a grant that we got from CMS. It was a three-year grant, $17 million, that we got in July 2012, and we just finished in June 30, 2015. So we completed the 3 years. And we started to implement. We had from July until January to start, to set up things, to bring trainers from Europe, to recruit part of the 64 full-time equivalents, to coordinate things with one hospital, five community-based organizations, recruit the peers, educate some things in terms of recovery, create a supervising structure, develop contracts, and a couple of other things. At the same time, I think that it was a dream come true for those of you who are in the field for some time. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It was really a magnificent thing. And I can't say enough about the passion and the commitment that all of us working on this brought to the table, from providers to evaluators to bureaucrats and everyone. I mean, it was really also the only way to do it. Even with all the deficits and shortages that we had, I think that we did something very good. So a little bit of background, if I can get this. Yes. There is definitely some agreement in terms of the needs that are unmet, in terms of what type of treatments are available for people with psychosis and what type of alternatives are there. I mean, there are definitely more information in terms of the limitations of medication. We know that medication is not as good as they promised us about 15 years ago. We don't know exactly how much, when to start, for how long, and what dose, for whom. But other than that, we know a lot about medication. So we have to bring everything together. And we still like to, of course, use whatever we have available, which is hospitalizations. And even with all those resources, we have, I don't know, 20, 25 years shorter life expectancy. What a crisis that would be in any other population, not to mention myself as a Latino and a Jew, and you put any other minority, this would be totally unacceptable. I mean, but for some reason, we still accepted the mental health. So we still use this medication. We send people to the hospitals, but there's no really much evidence in terms of what hospitalization does. And we keep changing the length of stay on hospitalizations, but I am willing really to hear if someone else has. I didn't see much in terms of literature showing what is the risk and benefit of being 4 days versus 16 days versus 2 days or overnight in an ER or in an inpatient bed. But we still use it, not very different from the substance use world. And of course, then it's really messy to bring people together and to reconnect you with your former provider and make sure that things that were done in one place are not being undone in the next one. And then we go back to the community, and the most innovative things that we have in the community, it's turning 40, if it didn't already. I don't know exactly when, well, early 70s, so probably a little bit over 40 that we started in Wisconsin to do ACT. You do well, and then as a prize, we take away whoever was providing services to you. Congratulations, you graduated, so you're not going to have all the things that were helping you. We still, of course, the main resource that we use are mental health providers, as myself, I'm a psychiatrist. And the peer participation is something that we've been talking for a long time, but we are still very, very slowly incorporating. The family moved from being someone that was the cause of all the problems and the schizophrenogenic mom to now being just someone that has to learn how to deal with the sick one. So it's just either the cause or has nothing to do with what's going on with the person, with the loved one. And this is, of course, a challenge that we have to deal with. And like in the case of ACT, that it's an evidence-based practice, we expect you to fail, or actually the system to fail you time and again and again and again, Congratulations, the citizen fellow and everything. Now you can access ACT. So within that kind of background, we decided to start to push for some alternatives and start the discussion within the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene in New York City. And we started to work with people of the Office of Consumer Affairs. That's something, it's an office that has been there for about 15 years. To see what else we can do in terms of providing alternatives for people who are struggling with this type of psychotic crisis. I think that there was some interest in terms of people struggling with first episode to see if we can change a little bit of what is the trajectory, not the person to become a professional patient. So we started to develop some activities. We started to inform and educate ourselves more and more. We were lucky that in New York City we had INTARC, which is an international organization that we're running a seminar just dedicated to that, to alternatives for people struggling with first episode of psychosis. So people from Northern Europe and other parts of the world came to New York City. We had access to learn from them and discuss with them. And then we started to network with the people from NKI, the Nathan Klein Institute. The three people sitting here did a wonderful job representing them. So we started to work with the people from NKI, with other people that also had some experience providing alternatives, mostly on respite for alternatives to hospitalization for people in crisis. And over a couple of years, we started to develop some notions and some ideas of what can we do in order to change that trajectory. And we started first with the respite as an alternative to hospitalization, but then we realized if we just do those 10, 14 days of intervention and respite without anything afterwards, the regression to the mean, it's going to be affecting everyone there, and we're not going to have significant impact in the life of the person, but just at that point. Good, but not good enough. So, at the same time, we have significant things going on in the system. People seeing that Medicaid really needed to become more efficient. Again, significant movement in the peer world. In New York State, people started to talk about peer certification, something that has been going on in other states already, but just starting now to be implemented in New York State. Of course, as usual, cost containment, it's a challenge. And something that we saw, the same way that we saw peers being providing or delivering this alternative in different parts of the country of respite centers. Support lines also was something that led by peers, providing peer-to-peer services that was a very effective way of providing support to people in crisis. And that's another item that we wanted to incorporate to this project. That we started to talk, but we didn't have a very specific thing in mind. And then happens to be that we hit the crisis in 2008, 2009, and then the government started to promote. And as we know, it's when there's a big crisis and no one wants to spend money, the only one that can reactivate an economy is the government. The federal government, as part of that stimulus package, put $1 billion available to everyone. And there was some innovation grants available to the country. We applied, we were lucky to get one of those. We got about $17 million for that. We're, I think, some of 8 or 10 of the first 100 projects that were authorized, only 8 of them were mental health. And we started to see, okay, if we're gonna start to do all the things, one of the issues that we wanted to do was really not to repeat different efforts in terms of incorporating a model without trying or attempting to change the system. And one of the ways that we wanted to attempt to provide lasting change to the system was to really bring peers to the forefront. Because of all the experience that we started to see coming out from the recovery movement, and also for the things that everyone says here, mostly duty, in terms of what are the things that the peer can bring to the system. So this is a complementary thing. It's not an either or, it's really how to produce some synergy in terms of the professional services together with the peer services. At the same time, Medicaid in New York State was implementing a 1959 waiver, or starting to think about that, so in order to provide services through a private system. Actually, it was privatized Medicaid. It's now managed care organizations are the ones who are delivering, or going to start to deliver, starting in October, but in January are the ones who are going to be doing this for the HARPS and for all these ACVS systems. And as city and state, we always have some challenges in terms of working together. It happened to be that it was a good time in our relationship, so I think that it was all these factors together that put us in a very good place to put together this application, and we started to do what Mary Jane already described before. So the difference is, what is different, or what we try to do different in Parachute really is, again, peers at every level. I mean, Judy is part of the evaluation team. I said that we were talking about this, and I was co-directing this with the director of the Office of Consumer Affairs, Julie Silver, who's a peer as well, and we have peers at every level. We try to do also to incorporate peers in every presentation that is related to Parachute. So we really try to put that at every level in order to make sure that this is not something that we decide for, but we decide and we design together with the people who are going to be benefiting from these services. We try to be as transparent as possible, as you saw. I mean, people were nice, but they also felt comfortable to criticize many of the things that we were doing, and I think that that's an important piece. I think that not only were very helpful for us in terms of giving us feedback during this, the time of the grant, but also now I think that through this feedback also we try to help people who are thinking about doing something similar in the future and learn from the mistakes that we mentioned before. The research was really key in terms of making sure that we could correct this type of implementation that was totally new for us. So I have to admit, a little bit delusional at the beginning, and we might still be, but I think that it was necessary in order to start something like this, but they were our super ego bringing us back sometimes and say, hey, you have to look at this. I mean, don't keep running, just slow down, look at this. Are you doing what you were supposed to do, what you promised that you were gonna do, or are you moving totally away from there? That was extremely helpful. And I mentioned before, the passion and the commitment that the community partners had. I mean, we had, for you to understand, during the first year, we were having weekly conference calls with every team, and we are talking about 8 teams, that every week we were having an hour and a half of conference calls, formal calls, besides the times that I was calling David or Neil and talking with people at NKI, and they were talking with other people and on themselves. I mean, this was really took a lot of commitment from people. We worked, again, the commitment from the trainers that were coming every other month from Europe and from Vermont, and willing really to work together and trying to understand what we were doing, and at the end giving us, even for free, a full curriculum to work with. That hopefully we have 1 minute afterwards to talk about the trainer, because I think that was a pretty cool outcome. And of course, this was a laboratory for the changes that we were talking before in terms of Medicaid reform in New York State. Starting in January 1st, we're going to have HARPS. Let me just jump a little bit. Health and Recovery Plans, which is really a managed care product that it's what the HMOs used to be called before, but this is carved in. Mental health is going to be part of it. So it's going to be a comprehensive approach for people using behavioral health services, plus medical, and everything is going to be carved in, everything is going to be put together under one product. Within that plan, we're going to have the health, the home and community-based services. And why is this important for us? When we were working as the City of New York with all our partners, we were also communicating with the state that people at the state were changing rules and regulations in order to implement HCBS services. And that was our vehicle for us to introduce the changes that we wanted in order to make this sustainable. We started with a grant, but then we had to create a structure that didn't exist in order to finance these changes. And that was the vehicle. And that was also the biggest umbrella that we have. There was a huge change. It was really very, very significant what's going on in New York in terms of the changes in Medicaid. And that helped us to sneak almost through the back door, some changes that otherwise in a very quiet environment would have been extremely difficult for people to take these type of changes. I mean, mobile teams working with people as often as needed for up to a year with two therapists, or a respite that was 90% staffed by people with lived experience, and even from Friday 5 p.m. until Monday in the morning, there was no professional available, but peers supervising. So those were very, very radical changes for a place that in mental health is a very conservative place, New York City. It's not as progressive as in other things. So we have other issues that we had to take into account. And we use this vehicle. It was supposed to start in January 1st, 2015. It was delayed. The state had some challenges that it had to deal with, and it's going to start in January 2016. So we had a transition time that we have to deal with, and I'm going to talk in a minute on what are we doing. 2 minutes? Wow. Okay. Some of the concerns that we have in terms of the future. I'm a little bit concerned, and I was talking yesterday with people from both NK and VNS. The temptation of showing that we are really machos, that we can take care of absolutely everything and everyone and all the time. So when people see that something is working, well, how about you treating people who have serious problems in terms of addictions and don't want to ever see you? Well, we have to resist temptation, and sometimes I say no. I mean, we are not able to do that. This is not a model that was designed for that. There's no evidence, nor here, nor in Europe, that this is going to work for someone like this. But we have a tendency to do this, to use or to adopt some of the things like ACT that we know that works, and then to say, well, if it works, we can expand for everything, and we forget that we start from the point that it's going to be person-centered. Well, we're going to have to resist that. We're going to have to make sure that we create similar approaches for different populations and make sure that this is being adapted the way that we've been adapting the things that we imported before for the other people. We have to work much, much more in terms of peer integration and recovery principles. This recovery is something that we've been talking for a long, long time. It's very, very, very difficult to implement. It's very simple in terms of the principles, but it's very challenging to implement in every place. I mean, it's a power struggle, and as any power struggle, of course, demands a lot of fine-tuning, but also keeping to account the different stakeholders. We didn't succeed as much as we wanted integrating mental health and physical health. I think that there are specific reasons that I'll be happy to talk afterwards. We have to make sure that, or to keep in mind and see what happens when we try to implement this, or when we try to scale this. The training, as it was mentioned before, we're talking about weeks and weeks of training. It's an expensive training. It takes time. You cannot put it all together in 10 consecutive days. It has to be done over 6 or 8 months. So it is a big commitment. It is expensive, and we're still developing or starting to learn what is the feasibility criteria for that. We, as I said before, we don't want to take on absolutely everyone, but we have to run away from the concept that this is an elite treatment for an elite group of patients. So we have to strike that balance. That's a significant challenge on how we're going to keep it really useful, but not being perceived as someone that is just really selecting someone that is already succeeded in order to show how well are we doing. We have to do better in terms of work and education, but at the same time, this is not a directive intervention. So how do we strike that balance again? How do we incorporate those principles? I mean, these are things that are being developed in Northern Europe with a totally different social aspect, and also the safety net that we don't have. So there are things that they don't need that we do need here, but also we have a different approach, and the role of both families and peers here is totally different from the one in Europe, and the expectation to reinsert people in the community, I think we're doing a good job, at least theoretically, to discuss how important is that, and we have to incorporate that to a model that didn't take that much into account. We have I'm very happy to have peers in the workforce. We have to make sure that they are not enforcers, and just to have a nicer face to enforce, and someone that is one of us to enforce the things that we want to do, and not for them to substitute. I mean, there's a very clear role for the peer, which is not to be a therapist or a psychiatrist or a nurse. So we have to be careful that they're not being used in that fashion and say, yes, oh, you told me about recovery, you told me about peers, this is why we're hiring these people. They cannot be cheap labor force. We don't have enough. Now, I mentioned that we have peer certification, and we're in January, we're gonna be opening tons of services in New York State for people. I'm finishing in a second. So we don't have enough of them. One thing that we have to remember, of course, the role of government, I mentioned at federal, state, and local. Of course, how important it is research in terms of pushing this, and now we have just, as Mary Jane said, fresh off the press, good results that we hope to publish very soon. And the other, the last point that I finished, I promise, we have to see where do we continue this discussion. How can we make sure that the gains that we had don't, they are not related to the people that did this, not at the provider, not at the user, not at the bureaucratic level. I mean, how do we create a forum? What is the place, what is the environment, and what is the really the place to discuss these issues and bring it up in terms of a broad discussion, in terms of what is the future of mental health? And within that, one of the reassurances is to have peers doing this, because they can really take ownership on that. But the rest of the community should be part of that. Otherwise, there's going to be another attempt like anything else. Thank you. Sorry.
Hi, I'm David Lindy. I'm going to finish up very briefly. I'm the, as Neil said, the clinical director and chief psychiatrist with the Visiting Nurse Service of New York Community Mental Health Services. And it was really our great privilege and pleasure to be part of Parachute NYC. These presentations this morning, I think, really give you a very nice overview of a very complicated, very ambitious, and even radical kind of program. And Mary Jane pulled this together, as well as the great research that she presented. As Pablo said, I was thinking about this as I was listening to all the presentations, it's sort of like we snuck this in. We use crisis, I think Judy made this point, we use crisis as sort of an opportunity to create system change, because when there's a psychiatric crisis, that's a sign of something breaking down. And while we tend to think of it as the person breaking down, we all know that it's really much more, it's typically much more than that. It's somebody who is at a point in a long trajectory in which many, many different elements have conspired to bring them to this point, including whatever biology they have, but their families, their psychosocial environments, economy, poverty, as well as all the terrible problems that we're very familiar with within the mental health and the physical health systems. So the other thing about crises, sort of fortuitously from this perspective, is they cost money, so they get attention. And so when we can come in and say, we can save you money here, we can get the ear of government, managed care, advocates of whatever stripes, but I think really what Parachute does is tries to introduce the whole issue of quality of life, recovery, agency, as we were talking about, for the person affected by the crisis, as well as the whole family. And I can tell you that from my experience as the person who was very directly involved on an administrative level working with our frontline staff, because we had responsibility for the mobile teams, who were used to working in a mobile crisis setting, which is very much triage and assessment. But the old days, when the program started, it was because of some awful situation in which a psychotic grandmother, the famous Eleanor Bumper story in New York City, some of you may be familiar with it, she was floridly psychotic, she's wielding a knife, and the cops killed her. And that became the crisis which precipitated Mobile Crisis. But early on, our idea, and Neil was out there doing the first visit, was to try to create opportunities for treatment for people who are otherwise not going to be available for treatment and provided in the home on an ongoing basis. Over time, that model sort of dropped out of the picture and it became much more a short-term kind of thing. But when Pablo came to us and said, are you guys interested in this parachute thing? We said, here it is. Here's the opportunity to kind of bring back that aspect of really working with people to stabilize them and help them and get them back on their feet and not just deal with the crisis. So I think that to really be effective in this regard, we need the kind of partnerships that we're talking about. The NETM model, the Need Adaptive Treatment model, which underlies all of this, so the open dialogue stuff. I went to these trainings and I was so struck by the many, many different cultures, peers, clinicians, trainers, government, people. It was almost a disadvantage that we were all speaking English in that room because it gave the illusion that people were understanding each other when we really weren't. So this, the whole parachute project provided us with an opportunity to really come to learn, I don't know what this person is talking about, but they don't know what I'm talking about either, and we're here to try to figure out how to make it work. It's very much like in a network meeting where people are trying to figure out how to talk to each other in a family for the first time. I heard about a case just the other day, a father and the son was the identified patient. They've been living together for years and years and years, but they finally had these network meetings. They hadn't talked to each other. They were living these parallel lives. And the team got them to really start working together. And the young man isn't miraculously better, but over time he's gotten hugely better in terms of the beginning of a whole new kind of life. So it can really be amazingly powerful and positive. And we're now, I mean, one thing I was saying to the light of Deborah's comments about model fidelity, as we move from demonstration program and all of the newness and the excitement and the investment, it's a resource-rich opportunity to bring this into the real world with all of its ambitiousness in terms of treatment sophistication and intensity of resources. I wouldn't go to model fidelity so quickly. I'm not sure we really know what we're doing yet. We're doing something very cool, and it's very, very exciting, and we hope that you're from all over the country and all over the world, and you'll bring parachute back to wherever you're going, and we can really start that community of practice that we were talking about. But I think to really make this work in from place to place to place, which is going to require big differences, we need to, in an open dialogue kind of way, we need to remain open to ambiguity and just kind of allow this thing to evolve further so we can get to understand it better and really get a more solid about. Because I know from the ACT world, fidelity has been, a two-edged sword. So I hope we don't rush too quickly to model fidelity. But with that in mind, I think if we have, if we have 2 seconds for any questions, we're out over time, and we apologize. It's just so much material. But
the next slide is my email.
The next slide is your email. There's Pablo. There's Pablo's email.
But
it's. And Pablo is really the guy who made this happen. So I think, he really deserves. Deserves kudos for this. So are there any comments or questions that anybody might like to share before we stop?
Yes, sir. We did a peer assessment project with Bronx State Hospital 25 years ago, maybe one of the.
Bronx, did you say?
At the Bronx State Hospital.
All right.
And what surprised us initially when we started that, this was for beauty, was the fact that we naively thought that these peers were going to be welcomed onto intensive case management teams as additional courses, et cetera, et cetera. And they were initially received as yet another sort of treatment burden for the team. Has that changed in 25 years? Was there a difference in terms of sort of the more professional clinicians thinking of clients as collaborators as opposed to someone who is also going to require care?
I think that it has evolved. I'm not sure what the attitude were, other than the clinicians weren't quite sure what to do with the peers.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it goes to speak to job definition. You know,
more so than stereotyping them as people with mental illness.
I think so. I would like to.
One one of the things that we saw is that at least now people are starting, professionals are starting to understand that peers are not a homogeneous group. It's not that because you're a peer, you're going to play God, the same way that you're supposed to work in the box, work with pricing, and I wanted that to have to do all the paperwork. I mean, the same with peers, the same with the academic, the nerd, and everyone else. So I think that some of those things hopefully were part of it.
I think some of it has changed as well, that there's less about hierarchy about peers, their own sub-world of their own hierarchy, and had to qualify based on pretty much the level of duration of your crisis in your psychiatric care. I think that's changed where peers need those people with those experience based, right, who are willing and able to participate. It is, I think, you know, with the part of the puzzle, there's some fragility to that process.
Right.
And there are people who are, you alluded to it, there are some people who are better at it than others, and don't feel free to get there like any other time, whether it's a secret dream or not. The problem for peers casualty might be greater than just for you know. So those are the things I think they're the next level of where we are going, is understanding, but they are evident in important ingredient to the testing program in many ways. As well as, and I don't want to forget this part of it, I think David and I represent the provider group. The transformation of culture and care and treatment for patients is radically different than historic. So untrained psychiatrists is swapping systems as opposed to live with systems and let them improve over time. It's a radical change. You have to talk in front of the patient about that patient, with that patient, it's a radical change. We surround it that side, we don't do it that way. So there's really the transformation of the system of care in many ways and it's welcome, but really hard.
I think the next group is arriving, so we have to stop. But thank you very much for coming.